Welcome, Inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. Today's show explores stories about being gay in Appalachia. We'll hear from people who feel strongly that people who are gay are behaving immorally.
When I talk about them, I talk about the sin of behavior. I talk about God's laws and the disobedience to God.
But not everyone in Appalachia feels that way. We'll also hear from people who are gay who call Appalachia home.
Maybe the popular perception is that everyone that's gay in Central Appalachia is in hiding. And that's not true. Acceptance for gay folks in a lot of their families might mean that they don't name their partner at family gatherings, but that person is welcome.
On today's episode, we'll explore how things have changed, are changing, on the issues of same-sex marriage and gay rights. And we'll hear from people from both sides of the issue and what they think about these changes. Welcome. Inside Appalachia, I'm Jessica Lilly. Across the country, there's been sweeping change in the last few years in the way the law treats gay people and how society in general feels about gay relationships. Just this summer, the Supreme Court ruled that gay marriage was legal in all states, throwing out bans on same-sex marriage in some states. Here in Appalachia, the acceptance of this change has been mixed. The battle is still ongoing in parts of Central Appalachia. That's where the showdown between gay couples and activists and a county clerk have unfolded. Kentucky Public Radio's Ryland Barton reported on this story last Thursday, on the morning that County Clerk Kim Davis had just been summoned to appear before a federal judge for her refusal to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples.
This week, Kim Davis had plenty of interactions with the public, and they go like this.
The United States Supreme Court has ordered you to do your job.
Step away from the counter.
I'm not stepping away from this counter until we get our marriage
license. You can stand right here in front of this counter because there's nobody here working today.
Davis spends much of the day with her office door shut and the blinds down, avoiding people and the media spotlight. The 49-year-old Democrat was elected to this post in November. She replaced her mother, Jean Bailey, who served as county clerk for 37 years. Davis hasn't issued marriage licenses to anyone since the Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage in June. Since then, protesters and couples who want to get married in their home county have hounded her. Flavis McKinney is a retired sawmill worker. He says he's known Davis for nearly 30 years, and he thinks she's doing a great job.
I have no complaint, and I don't think too many other people has. Everything's going smooth till this gay marriage thing come in.
McKinney says he prays with Davis in her office every few days. He's one of many religious supporters celebrating her stand. They applaud Davis's evangelical conviction to uphold her beliefs despite repeated rulings from federal courts that her personal views can't get in the way of her official duties. McKinney says the legalization of same-sex marriage is a sign of the end times.
She told me before she was elected, I was, you know, passing it in other states and stuff. She said, I can't do it. If she was elected to office, if it come to Kentucky, she said, I just can't do it. It's being the will of God.
Davis declined to be interviewed, but this week when the Supreme Court refused to hear her grievances, Davis doubled down. She released a statement that said she never imagined she would be asked to violate a central teaching of Scripture regarding marriage. Her critics point out, despite her moral posturing, she's violated principles of her own religion, apostolic Christianity, by getting divorced three times. Robbie Blankenship and Jesse Cruz tried to get a marriage license yesterday.
You've been married four times. Three divorces.
Three divorces.
We've been together 20 years. But our love is not equal to yours.
Davis was first married in 1984 and then in 1996, 2007, and 2009. The second and last of those marriages were to the same man, her present husband, Joe Davis. Jack Carpenter lives next to a house the Davises rent out to a member of their church. He says he was disgusted when Davis's personal life was used against her.
Where they're bringing how many times she'd been married into it now. You know, what's that got to do with anything? You know, I mean, I don't know. It's just, it's crazy. You know, here we are, this little small town. We're on national news.
Carpenter says Davis is a, quote, super, super nice lady. Even though he doesn't agree with her views, he feels sorry for her.
It's actually what she believes. You know, she's not doing it for publicity or any crazy stunt. It's, That's what's in her heart.
Carpenter says he can't imagine Davis backing down, and she's given no sign that she will. For NPR News, I'm Ryland Barton in Moorhead, Kentucky.
A federal judge on Thursday sent Kim Davis to jail until she complies with the order to issue marriage licenses. Still, the county can't just fire her because she was elected to serve as a county clerk. And there's a lot of support for her point of view in Kentucky. Bucking the national trend, the latest Bluegrass poll from August found that 53% of Kentucky voters disagree with the U.S. Supreme Court decision legalizing gay marriage. The latest poll says people are more evenly split over the fate of county clerks who refuse to issue marriage licenses. 38% of people in Kentucky said county clerks who refuse to issue marriage licenses should be removed from office. 36% said clerks should be allowed to refuse, and 16% said the power to issue marriage licenses should be transferred to a state agency. Again, here's Ryland Barton of Kentucky Public Radio. We chatted with him briefly by phone outside a diner in Moorhead, Kentucky.
Well, I think that a lot of the protesters are saying that, you know, what Kim Davis is doing is upholding what a majority of Kentuckians feel, which is that same-sex marriage shouldn't be allowed.
Barton says the little town of Moorhead has really never been in the national news before this, to his memory, and a lot of the people he's talked to have mixed feelings about what this means for their community.
Anytime you talk to somebody from Moorhead right now, they're just, you know, saying, wow, this is, it's really surprising that this small little town is thrust into the national spotlight all of a sudden. There are quite a few people from the media here, and that's what it's all about, is that the Moorhead is suddenly on headlines across the world, on the BBC. Somebody was saying today that it was on TV in Cambodia. They're feeling a little odd that it's that Moorhead is suddenly big news.
That was Ryland Barton, reporter for Kentucky Public Radio. So all the news in Kentucky lately inspired us to wonder, how are gay people treated here in Appalachia? Events like the one in Rowan County, Kentucky, don't paint our region as a picture of tolerance for gay people. But that's not the only story about what life is like for gay Appalachians. On a recent episode of the West Virginia Public Broadcasting podcast, Us and Them, host Trey Kay explores these changes from his unique perspective of growing up in West Virginia, then moving away to New York. Trey Kay takes us to his home state of West Virginia to revisit the stories behind one of Charleston's once notorious gay bars.
Ted Brightwell still remembers the first time he went to the Grand Palace. This was back in 1973, and the Palace was one of the few gay bars in Charleston, West Virginia.
Now, I was not very pretty then. I had on white fur hot pants, a black turtleneck sparkly sweater, a wig that just kind of sat on my head, and blue glitter eyeshadow, but I did have good shoes, and I could walk in them.
Ted was a theater geek, and he and some of his friends had gotten dressed up for fun, and they decided to strut their stuff at the bar.
But we walked in, and the first drag queen I saw there was a queen that looked just like Cher. And I was like, okay, I need to improve on some things. And I did. And, you know, 40 years later, I'm known across the country.
In 1995, Ted was Miss Gay World.
Anywhere I go, I get booked because I do Barbra Streisand, so it's just helped me become pretty well known.
He does Cher, too. A fan posted this video on YouTube showing Ted lip-syncing to a Cher tune. Guys in the crowd are holding up dollar bills and shouting as Ted struts around. He absolutely nails Cher's movements. Her singing poses and signature hair toss, even the licking of her lips. It's freaky how much he looks like her. Ted's come a long way since the first night he walked into the Grand Palace.
I mean, I knew what I was, but I had never been to a gay bar. So the first time I walked into the Grand Palace and saw men dancing together and had drinks bought for me because I was young and pretty then. And, it, you know, it at that point in time, I immediately, I mean, it was an epiphany. It hit me in the face. This is who you are, Ted. This is who you are. Don't hide it anymore. And I did it.
I'm Trey Kay, and this is Us and Them from West Virginia Public Broadcasting. It's the podcast where we tell stories from America's cultural divides. Here's why I wanted to hear Ted's story. I grew up in Charleston, West Virginia, where Ted lives, and I knew him back when I was in high school because he dressed hair for a play I was in, a production of My Fair Lady. And I don't get how someone like Ted could come from a place like that, a state where 53% of the people believe the Bible is the literal word of God.
There is good, and there is evil, and there is sin, and these are people who are choosing a behavior.
People like my friend Alice Moore haven't changed at all.
This kind of attraction and behavior was a practice of sodomy.
But there's a sweeping cultural change going on. I just saw a poll that shows that a majority of Americans now support gay marriage, even 45% of Republicans. But as much as things have changed for gay and lesbian people where I live here in New York, I'm not always so sure how things have changed in red state America. And that's why I wanted to go back home to where I grew up in West Virginia and talk to people. I wanted to know what it's like to be gay there today. And I wondered what it's like to be wary of all this change and see it happening all around you. So I went back and I talked to old friends and I went to church.
And Christians aren't upset about this. So there's no outrage over homosexuality. It's accepted today.
It wasn't accepted back when I was in high school. Contempt for gay people was just part of the landscape back then. My high school buddies and I used to drive by that bar that Ted mentioned, the Grand Palace, the gay bar, and we'd yell "F***" out the car window. Most of my friends didn't know it, but I went to that bar once. It was back in 1979. I was 17. And I was in a production of Jesus Christ Superstar. One night after rehearsal, some of the women in the cast wanted to go dancing at the palace. My buddies said, "No way." One of them said, "That's the f***ing bar." But the women said the palace had the best dance floor in town. It lights up like in Saturday Night Fever. So we reluctantly followed them into what we imagined to be our town's very own Sodom and Gomorrah. When we got inside, the women we were chasing were already out on the dance floor. The rest of the clientele were mostly men jumping, twirling, and grinding their hips into one another. I tried not to stare. I was expecting effeminate, girly men. There were tough-looking guys decked out in leather, chains, and studs like the biker dude and the Village People. I slipped off to the men's room. It was packed. The guy in the next urinal was a blonde bombshell in drag. He looked just like Marilyn Monroe. I kept asking myself, why is he doing this? Who'd have the balls to dress in drag in the middle of redneck Appalachia in the 1970s? More than 30 years later, I still wondered. And I asked Ted why he did it.
I came out with a vengeance, so therefore this is my home. This is where I live. This is where I'm going to practice my profession. And as a young idealist, I felt that, I can be defensive about that a little bit, and I'm going to say, I'm going to fight for my rights. And I felt very strongly about that. And maybe sometimes as you're young and idealistic, you might take things to an extreme. I mean, yes, there were times when I was flamboyantly walking down the street. Look at me, you know, I'm just a big old homo. But at the same time, as a young person, I'm thinking, okay, they're looking at me and they can make fun of me. I don't care, but I'm still here and I'm not leaving. So you got to get used to it.
Ted's not from West Virginia. His parents are, but his dad was in the military, and they moved around a lot. Ted came here to go to college, and he's done well since then. When he and I met for a walk around town recently, I met him in front of his hair salon, the Visions Day Spa. The spa sits on picturesque tree-lined Capitol Street, right in the heart of Charleston. It's surrounded by a hip bookstore, boutique lawyer offices, and a gourmet ice cream parlor. But doing hair wasn't Ted's career plan when he came to Charleston to go to college.
At the time, I thought I wanted to be a teacher, and then decided that I wasn't really cut out to be a teacher. And at that time, I kind of discovered who and what I was, and I kind of thought being gay in the school system was probably not the best idea.
When Ted did his student teaching, it didn't go well.
Just walking down the halls, like at a high school, I would hear Can I say f***? Mm-hmm. Okay. I would hear, you know, f***, f***. And I'm thinking, am I that obvious? Which I probably was. But at the same time, so I thought, do I want to subject myself to that every day in a career?
Ted became a hairdresser instead. It seemed like an acceptable job for a gay man. I think it must have been awful to be harassed so much that you change careers. But Ted says he loves being a hairdresser, and he downplays how badly some people have treated him.
I can't say that I had any kind of a hard time coming out by any means. I never felt threatened or in fear of my life walking down the street. And I was pretty, you know, pretty out. You know, we used to wear our fake fur coats and have just a tiny little bit of makeup on, have our carry our man bag in 1974, which you just didn't do. And I had to endure, you know, people talking about us and saying things and this, that, and the other. But I never felt threatened. But I was discriminated against.
Ted says he was fired from a bartending job because he was gay. And he was kicked out of two apartments.
The landlords would come up and say, I don't want your kind here.
What would they say?
Exactly that. I don't want your kind here. So you have to move.
And it was clear your kind meant a homosexual.
Yes, absolutely. And at that time, I was young and I won't say totally naive, but it hurt my feelings. It devastated me. I was working at the time as a bartender, and one of the guys, his father lived across the street from this apartment, and he said, I can find you this apartment. The guy's pretty cool. And I lived in that basement apartment for years because I did not want to subject myself to that again. Even though I was doing much better, I lived in this dump, you know, and finally my friends had to convince me to move out.
Where are we walking to now? Tell us.
We are walking to what used to be the Grand Palace, which the building is no longer there.
So we arrive at the place where the palace once stood, right next to the I-64 on-ramp. And I need to get something off my chest.
Okay.
So I'm confessing that, you know, in those years when I was a teenager, you know, you're out with your buddies and you're hot rodding around and whatnot. And I remember we would drive up this ramp and we would shout over the rail at the Grand Palace, f***. And I'm kind of embarrassed about that.
Did you throw eggs?
No, I didn't throw eggs.
Did you throw beer bottles?
I didn't do that.
Okay, well, but people did throw eggs and throw beer bottles. Now, I can't say that I know anybody that ever got seriously injured from that. Of course, that is dangerous. But I can remember one time myself coming through there, and all of a sudden we were walking by the wall, and we hear this splat, followed by f***. And it's like, oh, sh-, girl, they're throwing eggs at us. Run. And, of course, we were in drag, so it's like, they can't hit us. Can't hit us with an egg. You know, that'll mess up this makeup I spent 2 hours on.
I never threw eggs, but I'm ashamed of what I did do. I'd like to think that in the 30 years since then, I've grown up, and I kind of feel like the rest of us have, too. Today, Charleston has a gay pride parade. Men in drag march down the street, and people don't throw bottles. They line up and cheer, kind of like they do for the annual Shriners Parade. Today, gay people can get married in West Virginia, and Ted thinks that maybe one reason that's true is that guys like him were so out so early in the battle.
I like to think I helped, at least in this area. I tell the young kids all the time when they talk to me, I'm 60 years old now, so the 21-year-olds that I talk to, we'll talk about things. And I said, honey, you couldn't walk down the street holding your boyfriend's hand if it hadn't have been for me, you know? So just respect me, damn it.
If you're ever in Charleston, West Virginia, you can visit Ted at his salon, the Visions Day Spa. On most weekends, you can see Ted, or Miss Vicky Williams, as he's known, at a drag bar called The Broadway. You can see photos and links of Ted at our website, usandthempodcast.com.
For some Christian people, this whole debate is difficult. They have gay friends, but they believe the Bible says no to homosexuality. So they're struggling to figure out what they believe. And then there are people who haven't changed their beliefs at all, who aren't moved by the seismic waves sweeping the nation, like Alice Moore. Here's a listen to Trey speaking with Alice, who comes from a strong Christian background and believes strongly that homosexuality is immoral.
it's a tragic story in my view, my vision here. This is a sad story.
Things have really changed, and West Virginia has become a more tolerant place. But some people haven't changed, and they probably won't ever soften their stand on homosexuality.
Note that I am shaking my head in disapproval, but go ahead with your story.
Remember my friend Alice Moore? She is a conservative, God-fearing Christian who used to be on the school board of our county when I was a kid. Alice and I have a friendship that strikes some people as odd. She believes that the Bible is the revealed word of God, and I don't. But even though we disagree on so many things, she gives me insight into a way of thinking that's foreign to many of my blue state friends. And I think it's a perspective that we need to hear. And besides, I just like Alice.
Hi. Good to see you. Good to see you. How you doing?
Hi.
Alice lives in Tennessee now. I went to see her recently, and I told her that I was going to do a podcast that talked about my visit to a gay bar back when I was a teenager.
I literally thought that this was the Sodom and Gomorrah of Charleston. I mean, I thought going in there, what did you say?
I said it was.
It was what?
The Sodom and Gomorrah of Charleston.
How do you know that?
Well, that's where the name Sodom comes from sodomy and from this kind of attraction and behavior and people behaving in this way that was a practice of sodomy. I mean, if they were practicing that, they're practicing sodomy. So that was I'd say that would be the sodomy of Sodom and Gomorrah of Charleston is a good way to put it. And it's a tragic story in my view, my vision here. This is a sad story. But
why?
Trey, there is good and there is evil and there is sin, and these are people who are choosing a behavior. I mean, they are basically their own God. So, you know, I've told you before, if there is no God, there is no right and wrong. There is no morality. There is just my opinion and your opinion and maybe the opinion of the state, which is going to be more powerful than both of us and can force its morality on us both. If there is no God, there is nothing that you can say is wrong, evil, or good.
But here I am.
So, and you're saying this is the Sodom and Gomorrah of Charleston. I said, yeah, Sodom and Gomorrah of Charleston. If that's the kind of place it was, and that's the kind of people it was attracting, then, yeah, that was not a good place for you to be.
Back in the 70s, when Alice was a school board member, our county was planning to adopt some multicultural textbooks. Alice objected to the books. She believed liberals were trying to use schools to transform society. One thing they wanted was to force people to become more accepting of homosexuals.
So we're going to say, tell these little children, now, what is homosexuality? Well, if you're a boy and you like boys better than you do girls, then you may be a homosexual. Or if you're a girl and you like girls better than you do boys, you may be a lesbian. And we're going to start that in with kindergarten children. We're going to introduce them to this little girl who has two mommies or two daddies. It is evil. It is sin. It is the doctrine of secular humanism. It is the religion of the public schools that the government endorses and allows and encourages and requires in many cases. And that is what we replaced the doctrine of Christ with. And we take these little children and confuse them about things they've never heard of in their lives.
How should we talk about these people? I mean,
about these people. When I talk about them, I talk about the sin of behavior. I talk about God's laws and the disobedience to God, and he that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. And so I talk about sin.
The reason I like to check in with Alice on this is because views like hers helped to shape my early views on gay people. The idea that homosexuality is an abomination against God was something that pervaded the culture I grew up in. And people in West Virginia and other Appalachian states are still struggling with this.
So
What do you think about Alice's perspective? What do you think about Trey's experience as a young person in Charleston, West Virginia? Can you relate? Send us a tweet at InAppalachia or email insideappalachia@wvpublic.org. We've been listening to radio producer Trey Kay, who hosts a podcast called Us and Them. When we come back, we're going to hear the next part of this podcast, where Trey Kay interviews our own Roxy Todd about the story of a former coal miner in West Virginia who was harassed at work for being gay. But while we're on the subject of how gay people are treated in Appalachia, this week for What's in a Name, we wanted to share the story behind a small town in Kentucky that made headlines a few years ago when it became the smallest town in America to pass an anti-discrimination ordinance. The law is meant to protect people from losing their job or being tossed out of their homes because of their sexual orientation. Know the name of this town in Kentucky? Here's a hint. It originally got its name by shortening the name of the Virginia Coal Company. We'll have the answer after the break. This is Inside Appalachia.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia, with career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.
You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. Thanks for tuning in. You're one of a growing number of fans of Inside Appalachia. Thank you for telling your friends, and thank you for subscribing to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We had a nice letter last week from one of our listeners. Jim Wrench lives in Morgantown, West Virginia. He says, I recently become a big fan of Inside Appalachia and Jessica Lilly. I've found your stories and commentary so fresh so far from the stale crap that one-time observers offer. I particularly like her personal comments, like when Jessica talked about her Holiness Mother and singing around the kitchen table. Roxy Todd goes in the same basket. So thanks. I appreciate it and keep it up. Such a truly touching and encouraging message, Jim. Thank you very much. Hey, if you have something you'd like to tell us, you can send us an email at feedback@wvpublic.org or send us a tweet at InAppalachia. So back to our What's in a Name quest. What city in Perry County, Kentucky got its name by shortening the name of the company that founded it, the Virginia Coal Company? Vico, Kentucky. With a population just over 300 people, the town made national headlines in 2013 when it became the smallest town in America to pass an LGBT anti-discrimination ordinance. You see, while we have laws protecting against discrimination based on gender or race, there is no federal law that prevents discrimination for sexual orientation. And in many states, including Kentucky, there aren't statewide anti-discrimination laws that include sexual orientation. The little town with the anti-discrimination ordinance came to the attention of some people out in Hollywood. One of the co-creators of the show, Will and Grace, Matt Muchnick, was inspired to donate a playground to the city. A team of producers from The Hollywood Reporter traveled to Vico to make a short film as the new playground broke ground. They talked to Claude Branson Jr., one city commissioner who helped pass Vico's fairness ordinance.
We knew our mayor was gay, and that's okay with us. I see nothing wrong with it. You know, all people's equal.
Vico has struggled in recent years because of layoffs in the coal industry. Still, the fairness ordinance has helped boost a lot of the local pride, and Mayor Johnny Cummings told The Hollywood Reporter that it's helped put Vico on the map.
We've had so many cards and letters and donations, you know, for what we did, and it's helped the city out in so many different ways, and which hopefully it just helped us continue to grow and get better.
By the way, we checked in with Mayor Cummings again this week to find out how the town has been doing since it first passed its anti-discrimination ordinance back in 2013. Cummings said there are a couple of new smaller businesses that have opened in town, and he says a new moonshine distillery is set to come to Vico soon. He says construction on that new business could begin later this fall. Now, Vico is a very small town with fewer than 350 people. But in February, the even smaller town of Thurmond, West Virginia, with a population of just 7 people,
became the smallest town in the country to pass a ban on all discrimination. Many other towns throughout Appalachia have passed similar laws, and others, including Berea, Kentucky, have voted them down. Berea is the home of a musician who we featured on Inside Appalachia, who wrote a song about a former coal miner.
Tell me I'm not man enough to set foot in that mine. Go on and tell me that once more, to my face this time.
That's musician Sam Gleave singing a song inspired by the miner Sam Williams. On this episode, we've been exploring the many different ways that gay people are treated throughout Central Appalachia. There's increasing acceptance of gay marriage, but gay men and lesbians can still face discrimination and harassment at work. That's what happened to Sam Williams, who used to work as a miner for Massey Energy. Our producer Roxy Todd reported on this story, and she was featured on the Us and Them podcast that we've been listening to on our show today. Here's Trey Kay again talking with Roxy about the story of Sam Williams.
So I want to hear a little bit about Sam Williams. He was a coal miner a few years back. What happened to him?
Well, Sam Williams was working for Massey Energy, and he really enjoyed being a coal miner. He had a lot of really close friends that were coal miners with him. And at some point, his friends found out that he was gay, and they started harassing him at work. He kept working at Massey Energy for about 5 years, and eventually he quit because the harassment became so brutal.
So you visited him recently. Where's he living now?
Sam lives with his husband, Burley, about a half an hour outside of Charleston. They have a little townhome, and I visited with them when they were making dinner. Sam Williams has two dogs, Bella and this chubby little bulldog, Lacey.
Give Day 11. Yes, you days, girl. You days, love bug.
So, Roxy, how was it that Sam Williams came out to his coworkers?
Well, he didn't come out. They actually found out about it.
They just took it upon themselves to watch, follow, see me come out of a bar, automatically stereotype me. I faced a lot of things in the mines. I've been told that they hope all faggots die. There's a fine line from somebody saying that they're joking and then looking you in the eye and saying it and knowing that that's what they meant. But when it's your supervisors, it's a whole different ballgame.
So the coworkers found out he was gay. What happened next?
Well, the harassment at work escalated. And his coworkers even would follow Sam out to his car, and his coworkers even would show up at night, bang on his door. And Sam and his husband Burley, they installed this heavy-duty security system, which is still there. I saw it, and it alerts them whenever someone walks through the front or the back door. And they became so threatened that Burley even bought himself his first gun.
It was nerve-wracking.
This is Burley.
They messed with his vehicle, like scratched and quit, took the wheel weights off his tires. I never knew when he was coming home, and when he didn't come home, I had to go out and drive, go to mines and search for him. I'm thinking someone shot him on the side of the road.
That sounds horrible. So I understand that Sam Williams quit, and he sued Massey Energy. But I'm interested to know how he was able to sue Massey. I mean, because you say in your report that in West Virginia, laws against discrimination don't cover sexual orientation. I mean, it's legal to fire somebody or harass somebody who's gay. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. It is legal at this time to discriminate against somebody just because they're gay in West Virginia. The way it worked is that Sam's lawyer sued Massey Energy for sexual harassment at work, and they settled out of court because Massey Energy was actually bought out by Alpha Natural Resources, and that company decided they wanted to settle this case and kind of get it off their plate. So it is still possible at this time in West Virginia for people to be fired. But there are activists who are trying to work to change that law at the state level.
And I understand that you've talked to folks in one activist group, Fairness West Virginia. Let's hear a little bit of the conversation you had with Andrew Schneider from Fairness West Virginia.
It's particularly, I think, risky now that we have marriage equality
because you can get married on Sunday and then fired on Monday. Marriage, in some ways, makes our relationships in the gay community more visible. And so you are more prone to have the picture of your loved one on your desk. You want to talk with coworkers about what you did with your family over the weekend.
Oh, that's interesting. So we're in a weird transition phase where it's becoming more socially acceptable, but at the same time, it's almost like people in the LGBT community are more vulnerable to discrimination.
And in some ways, it wasn't expected. We never expected we would get marriage before we got non-discrimination.
So one thing that got you interested in going back and checking with Sam Williams is that there's a new song about him. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, there's a singer-songwriter who lives in Kentucky, and his name is Sam Gleaves. They're both Sams, so it gets a little complicated talking about them. But Sam Gleaves, he's born and raised in southwestern Virginia. He's trained as an old-time musician. He's 22 years old. He's young. And this is the first album that he's been doing with songs that he's written himself. And the title song, the new album, he played for me on the banjo in his home. It's called Ain't We Brothers.
I was born here just the same as you. Another time, another day. I'm sure the good Lord took his time, made each of us just this way.
So you talked to songwriter Sam Gleaves, and what did he tell you about why he wanted to write about the experience of Sam Williams?
Well, he heard about this story of Sam Williams being discriminated against in the coal mines, and he thought that this was a really interesting story about somebody who had a lot of courage. Even though he didn't come out on purpose, Sam Williams really started taking an active role and speaking out against what happened to him in the mines. And Sam Gleaves was really impressed.
I was thinking about what it means to be a man in our home region in Central Appalachia. You know, a lot of people would say there's kind of a narrow definition of what it means to be a man here.
Tell me I'm not man enough to set foot in that mine. Go on and tell me that once more to my face this time.
And I was thinking, you know, he's more of a man. He's brave. He's taking a stand for who he is, and he's not going to put up with this abuse, and he's honest. You know, that's what makes him a man.
So Sam Gleaves is gay himself, and he's making music in a kind of a traditional world in rural Appalachia. Is that one reason he was drawn to this story? And has he faced discrimination like Sam Williams has?
Sam Gleaves told me he never has faced the kind of discrimination that Sam Williams has experienced. And he did mention that some of his mentors in the music community are gay themselves and open, and that that is changing in the old-time music community. But that said, he does have some older musicians that he knows and he's learned under, and he knows that he has held off being open with them. But for the most part, Sam Gleaves does say that he's able to be open with his own sexuality.
Maybe the popular perception is that everyone that's gay in Central Appalachia is in hiding because they're afraid of, you know, religious repercussions or being shunned by their community for whatever reason. And that's not true. I think there's a subtlety about Appalachian culture and about the way we communicate sometimes, where a lot of things go unspoken, but they might be communicated in other ways, you know, like acceptance for gay folks in a lot of their families might mean that they don't name their partner, you know, their partner at family gatherings, but that person is welcome anyway.
So the song about the miner that he wrote, has the miner heard it, Sam Williams?
Yes, he heard it and he loves it.
That is a powerful song. And I mean, it was so, I loved it because when he comes on there and he says, you know, I come home to my man or my husband or...
You never know. I think I got a man waiting on me at home or something.
Yes.
First first things first, I'm a blue-collar man with scars on my knuckles, dust on my hands. Probably wouldn't have ever known I've got a man waiting on me at home.
That relates to me so much because I know that Burley was waiting for me at home. I mean, he would wait up for me until we got in, and then he'd have dinner waiting on me, even though if I'd got in at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know.
So what does Sam Williams do now that he's not a minor anymore?
Now Sam Williams is a manager at a local Dollar General, but he did tell me that he still misses the work that he did in the coal mines.
I do miss running good coal. I miss, you know, being top dogs on the coal crew and before things started getting more violent. If there was a perfect world out there, I'd love to be another coal. I mean, I'd love to be a coal miner again, but it'll never happen again, more than likely. But it was fun.
To tell you the truth, I don't want to fight. Just want to say one thing I'll write to you. Ain't we flesh and blood all through? And ain't we brothers too?
Again, that was Sam Gleaves. His first album, Ain't We Brothers, is set to be released on November 13th. You can hear more of his music on our website, wvpublic.org. Today we've been hearing stories from a new podcast by native West Virginian Trey Kay. It's called Us and Them, and it highlights opposing views from both sides of so-called culture wars. The episode that we've been listening to is called Revisiting the Grand Palace. In the next part of the show, Trey looks at how the issue of same-sex marriage has changed here in West Virginia.
Sam and Burley Williams got married back in 2010. They had their wedding in Washington, D.C. because same-sex marriage wasn't legal in West Virginia. But things have changed.
First tonight, we begin with a breaking news alert out of West Virginia, where same-sex couples are now allowed to marry.
West Virginia used to ban gay marriage, but the law was struck down in court. In the fall of 2014, the United States Supreme Court refused to hear appeals of cases like that. So, West Virginia joined a growing number of states that legally recognize the marriages of same-sex couples.
This comes after Attorney General Patrick Morrissey said his office would no longer fight a court challenge to the state's ban on same-sex marriage.
We did everything in our power. We litigated this case. We had intervened. And while I'm disappointed with the Supreme Court's decision, because I really think it takes power away from the states and from the local folks, at the end of the day, as the Attorney General, I have to respect Supreme Court decisions and precedents, whether you like it or not.
This whole thing happened before many West Virginians could get their mind around the idea. The Sunday after the law change, I went to the Church of the Nazarene in Nitro, West Virginia.
And I just want to say this morning, I'm not going to preach a message on homosexuality this morning, but I do want to tell you that I'm utterly disappointed in our governor. I'm utterly disappointed in our attorney general, and I'm disappointed in the Supreme Court. So I believe that we are a nation that's turning away from God, and our nation desperately needs prayer. Make Sarah feel
And well. Preacher David Clark says he's disappointed that more preachers aren't speaking out about this brave new world of homosexuals marrying in West by God, Virginia.
And Christians aren't upset about this. So there's no outrage over homosexuality. It's accepted today. There's no outrage over adultery. There's no outrage over sex out of wedlock. There's no outrage over teen pregnancy. There's no outrage over lying, cheating, or stealing. No outrage. But the only sins that bring outrage today are pedophilia. Society doesn't accept.
While Preacher Clark was struggling to wrap his mind around the notion of gay marriage, the first same-sex couples to get hitched were also having trouble getting used to the idea.
Casey McGee, do you take Sarah Atkins to be your lawfully wedded spouse to have the hold from sickness and health? Will that be your partner?
I do, but where are rings?
That's Casey McGee at her wedding to Sarah Atkins. They were the first same-sex couple to marry in West Virginia, and they were the plaintiffs in a lawsuit to force change in the state's marriage law.
I got the phone call about 2:45 saying you need to go to the courthouse. It's a big deal for other people, and I've gotten a lot of, you know, thank yous and congratulations. And But I didn't do it to be the first. It was really cool that we were the first, but we did it because we wanted to be married.
That's Cassie McGee and Sarah Adkins McGee, the first same-sex couple to be married in West Virginia. Trey Kay originally produced this story for the Us and Them podcast after West Virginia legalized same-sex marriage, but before the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of same-sex marriage nationwide. Some Appalachians and folks across the country are worried about what this means for America. As we heard earlier in the show, a county clerk in Kentucky named Kim Davis has continually refused to issue marriage licenses. And that story has put Appalachia in the national spotlight recently. Like Davis, and like Alice Moore, who we also heard from in our show, many people who oppose gay rights say their religious beliefs are the main reason they feel so strongly on this issue. But there are people who interpret the scriptures differently. For the final part of our show, we're going to hear Trey Kay's interview with an Episcopal priest named Jim Lewis. Back in the 1970s, Lewis shocked people in Kanawha County, West Virginia, because he believed that the Gospels called on him to welcome gay people into his church.
Well, they were looking for a place where they could talk about some of the serious things other than at the bar. The bar was down the street from the church where they used to gather. It was known that that was a gay bar. That was it in those days. But they wanted a place where they could sit and talk. The guy that came to me was a speechwriter for the governor. He was playing in the folk mass at the Catholic Church. He knew that if he came out, he would lose both those positions. He wouldn't be playing the guitar anymore at the Catholic Church. He wouldn't be writing speech writing for the governor. That was the 70s. Wouldn't have happened. And they had their own personal problems with one another, where they relate to one another as closeted people. And they wanted to talk about that in a safe setting, and so the church provided that safe setting. They asked me if I'd sit in on some of the meetings, and I said, well, sure, I need to learn. I'd be glad to sit in, and I did. Then I began to see some of them would come to me personally because they knew that I wasn't going to judge them, and they knew I had a different understanding of the gospel message, the Jesus message, that wasn't what they were accustomed to and even had been hurt by in the churches that they had been members of. So they trusted me, and they came to me. And then finally, two couples came to me on their own, two women and two men, and said they would like me to bless their relationship. By the way, God could have given me an easier situation. The women, one of them had a child. Ooh. The male couple, one of them was white, one of them was black. Could have been easier. You know, it was a challenge. I mean, there were a lot of barriers being broken here with this one. I mean,
well, what was the problem with the woman with the child, and what was the...
Well, the women, I mean, in those days, you see, this was in the 70s. Gay people weren't supposed to be trusted around any children. Some of those attitudes are still with us. Oh, my Lord. Now I've helped people adopt who are gay, adopt a child. But remember, in those days, to have a couple married... two women and raise a child without a man, this could be very dangerous. And this was not the way God intended. I mean, that was the way we were being told by a strong religious force in this country. So I took them in the church separately, two separate events, and took the service, the marriage service, and I revised it in some ways so that it would fit them. And they took the vows, they kissed, and then we had a little champagne or something, and that was it.
Lewis says the church's governing committee was shocked, and some of his parishioners were kind of traumatized.
Are we going to be able to pay the bills and keep the church open? Jim, I know you welcome these people in, but, you know, we may not have a church here if all these people with this gay stuff. This might be the end of the world. The sky may be falling in on us here at the church. This is something that's, you know, it's better not to talk about it. It's better, and I phrase it this way, it's better that we keep this in the closet. And so we kept it for a while until the story broke in the paper about the gay community with the one paragraph that said Jim Lewis had married two couples. Well, I did marry them, but you see, we'd have to get into a bigger subject here with this. There's a civil service, civil legal issue, and there's a church issue. And so I did not marry them in terms of the state, and I needed to remember that the laws needed to be changed in order that they could have legal rights. But I did nothing for the state in this. I didn't sign any papers because we weren't allowed. There was nothing allowed at that point. This was the 70s.
Are you still in touch with these couples? What's ever happened to them?
Well, one of them died. One of the men died. I'm still in touch with one of the men through Facebook. And the women I've lost touch with, I kept touch with them for a long time. They moved to Baltimore, and I'm not in touch with them now, no.
Do you have any idea how long their unions lasted? I mean, were they long-lasting relationships?
As far as I know, they were. I mean, their relationships went on for a number of years after the blessing. It's amazing that they went on at all. You had to hide. I used to think, you know, I'm married to a woman for 55 years. What would it be? I used to think this thought to myself. What would it be if I couldn't take her to a party? If I couldn't hold her hand? If I couldn't kiss her in public? And that's what we were in the 70s. What a hell of a situation that is. Real hell.
When I first learned of you as Jim Lewis, mm-hmm. when I first learned who you were the guy who married the queers.
Good.
How did that feel? That was my perception. Did that sting a little bit? How does that feel?
Well, whenever you call a name, the Christian tradition teaches me this, and I had to learn it. Again, my feet planted in it. Count it as a blessing. You want to call me a lover of queers? I do love queers. Thank you. Count, and you know that comes right from my scripture, and I had to learn that. In seminary, I wasn't thinking about that particular. I never think they're going to call me all these names, but count it a blessing and understand that they're calling me that because they don't understand me. When they don't, may not even understand the gospel message if they're yelling it from a pulpit. But I think there's a very friendly attitude here now about gay people in West Virginia, and we certainly have our demons to fight. This is not a progressive battle that it's over with and now we can celebrate. It's going to racism and sexism and classism and militarism. They continue to bounce up like demons, and we have to fight them when they come up. And so the battle's not over. But I tell you, when I see a headline on the paper that the first gay couple had been married here in this state, the size of that print on the Daily Mail newspaper here, which is a fairly conservative paper, is the same size that you see when a war is over. I mean, the war is over, and you see these big, bold, black letters. I said, oh, my God, I never thought I'd see this in my lifetime. They were ready to hang me back in the 70s, and now I never thought I'd see this kind of change. It's been a remarkable, remarkable social change.
Thanks for listening to our episode today that explores how gay men and lesbians in Appalachia are treated and why there are so many strong feelings on both sides of this issue. We want to hear what you think. Are things changing where you live? Do you think it's okay for Christians to keep the belief that homosexuality is a sin? Can people have different beliefs without being dismissed? Is it hard to be gay in Appalachia? Send us a tweet at @InAppalachia. We had help producing Inside Appalachia this week from Kentucky Public Radio, Us and Them, and Moorhead Public Radio. Music in today's show was provided by Sam Gleaves, Jake Sheps, and the Glenville State Bluegrass Band. Our What's in a Name theme music is by Martika and William with Johnson Ridge Special from their album Songs of a Tradition. Our producer is Roxy Todd. Our editor is Catherine Winter. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org. Find us on Twitter @InAppalachia or @JessicaYLilly. The Inside Appalachia podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and at wvpublic.org.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.